Hello and welcome to episode 28 of the Derailed Podcast. I'm Chris.
And I'm Fred.
Happy New Year, Fred.
Happy New Year to you too, Chris.
Yeah, man. Do you have any resolutions?
I don't really, hey. I think in general, try and be a little bit more healthy, but I don't generally set like hard and fast. By June, I'm going to lose 7 kilograms or anything like that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so I actually said to someone this year that I'm not doing resolutions, but I want to do goals.
Mm.
I have like things that I'd like to look back on at the end of 2020 and say like, yeah, I did that. Or I made positive changes. Because I think the problem with resolutions is like you say, if you're like, I'm going to lose this amount of weight. So let's say you said, I'm going to lose 7 kilos by March.
Mm.
Let's say, then you get to March and you haven't lost anything. You're like, oh, this whole thing's screwed. And you're just free for all for the rest of the
year. Or worse, you get to like February and you're like, I'm not going to make it. And you give up then.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I feel like that's the problem with resolutions. It's once they kind of shattered, which they almost always are, you just throw everything out with them.
Yes.
So this year I'm doing goals, like health goals, like better life choices goals. So I want to be able to get to the end of this year and look back and say, yeah, I made like better decisions this year. Mm. I was healthier. I achieved some of the things I wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
So not like hard and fast, but like still holding myself accountable.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. I think that's a good way to do it. Yeah.
That's the way I'm doing it.
Yeah. Cool, man.
Yeah, man. So trains. This is a train podcast.
Yes. Not a healthy eating podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Don't worry about that.
You can have your snacks while you listen to this.
Exactly. There's no judgment here.
Yeah.
It's a safe space.
Mm.
Yeah, so we have some new Patreons.
Yes, we do.
In spite of the December-January pinch.
Yes, yeah, it's quite cool that we got some new ones. So we have two new patrons, Noah Musket and Garrett Weirman. I'm pretty sure I've seen Garrett on Instagram.
Yes, you're our Instagram manner.
Yes, yeah.
I'm our Twitter manner.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you very much, guys. We really appreciate it.
Yes, yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Very, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for our episode today, we actually had a few topics that kind of coalesced that we wanted to chat about. A couple of topics suggested by people who emailed in, topics suggested by Pear on Discord. And yeah, and I think also we got a really nice long email from one of the train shuffling guys about 1862.
Hmm.
So we wanted to chat about that as well because we chatted about that last week and I think he made some really cool points that'll be good for discussion and sort of follow up.
Okay, great. Yeah.
On that. Yeah. So that's kind of our plan for today.
Yes.
Oh, but you wanted to start. We did something interesting. Well, I wasn't part of it. I was away.
Yes.
Unfortunately, but yeah.
So on Friday, I didn't really have anything to do. Okay, I had been back from holiday, you know, wasn't busy or anything. So on Friday, I posted in the Discord, who wants to try like a real-time online 18XX play on RR18. And try and do it in real time. Like we're all online at the same time and do it. And Pear and Brian said they were keen. You were away, unfortunately.
I was at Kruger Park taking a long weekend.
Yeah. So the three of us did that. And it was quite fun. We didn't end up finishing it all in one sitting. I initially estimated, like, let's set aside 4 hours, I said. Whoever has 4 hours today, let's try and do it in that time. So we all committed to 4 hours. I think we got to the beginning of stock round 4 in that 4 hours.
Okay.
So pretty far. What was cool though is we used Discord's voice like function.
So
we
were all you guys chilling in there.
Yeah, we were all chatting to each other voice, which is cool because then you can just tell everyone, okay, I'm ready, it's now your turn, Brian, or whatever, and then Brian refreshes his RR18XX and takes his turn. And what it worked really well for was that initial auction. So what we did with that is we would do the, like, as soon as, like, what I started calling the cascade, as soon as the cascade starts, like someone buys that first company and you're now in the bidding for a single private company and there might be two of the three people involved in that. We just kind of agree, like, we just verbally said on Discord, okay, I'll go to 125. And then, for example, Brian says, I'll go 130. And then I'm like, I'll go 135. And then he says, no, okay, I'll pass there. And then whoever had the bid would just type that into RR18X like once at that price.
Right.
And then win it that way. So we basically just, instead of submitting via RR18X back and forth those prices, that auction, we did that mostly verbally and then entered the correct prices, whoever had to enter the price and did it that way. So I think it helped a lot for that.
Okay.
So I think like Brian says, he'd like to start all online RR18Xs that way possible. We just get through that initial auction and then you can do asynchronous from there onwards, which I think is a good idea.
Yeah, that's true. That does save a lot of time because sometimes that can take long. I feel bad because I'm often the longest person to take my turns, which is so irritating. And I always use this excuse, but it's not an excuse. It's true. It's because during the day, it's often hard for me to get to it because when I'm working, because I'm a psychologist, I'm in like appointments.
Yeah.
So it's not like I can just take 5 minutes out of my day to like type something because I'm like talking to someone. So I'm always like very actively engaged with someone and not near electronics for the whole time that I'm working. So you have a really busy day. Sometimes you don't really get much of a gap to take turns and stuff like that. So I always feel bad though when it's like I take like the whole day and then I look at it, I'm like, pause. You know?
Yeah, I don't like when I play on RR18XX, I don't expect more than a turn a day from people. But for that initial auction, that can be like $5 increments going back and forth for a couple of days, you know. So
yeah,
if you can get through that fairly quickly, I think that saves a lot of time.
I think especially with something like 1830, where a lot of the values are kind of known, though, I think there's also something to be said for not bothering with some of the $5 increments.
Right.
Which I've noticed people have done in our games, like with the CNA, they'll just go straight to like 200 or something.
Yeah, I've started doing that. So I'll just
Bother going like 170. Because no one's going to let you have it for 170. No. So just put go in a to real 20. Bid.
Yeah, whatever you're willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
But put in that. So I've started doing that as well to save some time, yeah. But the actual play itself was interesting. I think I learned quite a lot.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But I'd rather show you in our next play than,
than
discuss it all here.
Oh, okay. The gloves are off. This is longer a strategy podcast.
Oh, yeah. No, I can discuss it. No, so there was a lot of like just trashing each other's share values.
Right.
Like someone would par at 100 and before the company even operates, the value is down to like 67 or 70 or something like that, you know, which I think is something we haven't done that much of in our group, in our face-to-face games. And I think it does in the long run, it keeps those companies from running away at the top of the stock chart there.
Right.
So that is definitely something I'll be looking at opportunities to do in future for sure.
Joe, the British menace does that a lot.
Mm, yeah.
He does a lot of stock trashing. Yeah. I remember Rudy saying to one of, I can't remember where we were, but he was like, oh my God, like I can't keep up with this guy. Like I had started... He started three companies. Both of mine are trash. Like, I don't know what happened. Like, this whirlwind came through his game. Like, one of our games, Rudy's in a terrible spot. He's like president of two companies and both their shares are like down to like 40 or something.
Yeah.
That was the London menace.
Yeah.
Joe's probably not from London. Sorry, Joe. There's more cities in England than that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, no, that play was fun. So, yeah, I think I learned some stuff there. And we actually finished it. What day is today? Today is Tuesday.
Yeah.
We finished it yesterday.
Oh, nice.
So we started it on Friday, finished it on Monday. It was just three of us and we were all online still a lot over the weekend and things. But not like we didn't, you know, get together and agree upon like next 2 hours we're playing or anything. We just kind of took our turns during the day and we finished it yesterday.
How was kind of, I guess I want to say like almost the social aspect of it. Like, did it feel like a face-to-face game with the voice chat and the real-time stuff?
Not so much, no. Like, I think it's difficult to have the same kind of banter you do face-to-face remotely. Otherwise, you start interrupting people.
Right.
It's like, even when we did our podcast, when we were in separate locations, like, even there, we would sometimes, like, both start speaking because you don't have that visual cue of this person is about to start speaking kind of thing, you know? So it wasn't that social. I mean, it was definitely a lot more social than just the other asynchronous ones. We did have some chatting and things and stuff like that, but not as much as face-to-face.
It's a cool idea, though. I'm glad you tried that because that's also utilizing the Discord platform as well.
Yes, yeah.
Because Discord obviously has options for voice channels and things like that. So, I think it was cool that you did that.
I think we'll leave the voice channels there on Discord. So other people, if they want to on our Discord, some of our patrons do that as well and maybe start a game that way or something.
Right. I think we should definitely leave a few open so that if people want to do it, that we're not necessarily there to create them or whatever, that they can just go ahead.
No, it worked pretty well. Like, not as well as face-to-face, but pretty well, yeah.
Nice, man.
Mm.
That's cool.
Yeah, I lost, by the way.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Who won the game?
Brian won the game.
Okay.
Yeah. Per and I had a little bit of a battle for seconds, but yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite a fun finish as well. Like in the last stock round, I managed to dump a company onto Pear, but Brian also managed to dump a company onto me.
Okay.
So I, like, my plan was to dump the company on Pear. So I bought the train out of the company. So basically I had three companies and three permanent trains. So what I wanted was my one company to have two diesels because it could make use of two diesels and run a big route. And then my second company just have a permanent. But then Brian also managed to dump a company on me, which I saw it coming before the stock round, not when I was making my original plan, but then I was like, oh, okay. So I'm going to have three companies and three permanents, so it's not so bad. But,
yeah.
But so Per had to buy a permanent, but he actually had the cash, I think. Yeah. Like, we were all pretty flush with cash at that point, so it wasn't too big of a deal, and he was still second then, yeah.
Speaking of online games, have you taken your turn in our podcast game?
The Dads on a Map one?
Yes.
I took my turn today, yeah.
Have you taken your turn since you had to force buy a train?
Oh, yeah. I force bought one of the trains today, yes. I'm on my next turn, I have to force buy another one.
Are you going to go bankrupt?
I don't think I will quite, no.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So this was kind of an interesting situation. So the Dads on a Map has a Discord, actually, but it's just an open Discord. So I joined that and was chatting to them about it. And I was wondering if I'd made a mistake. So it was kind of an interesting situation where I could have either bought the 4 train from either company, because I have a 4 and a 5 train in one company, and I was sitting with a trainless company. So I could have bought the 4 or the 5, but then I noticed that there's a bunch of trainless people. So the diesels are going to come out. Mm. So my 4 train's going to get rusted.
Mm.
So I bought the last 6 using my player cash plus like maybe $300 from my company. So a bit of an investment, but not awful.
Right.
Okay. And it saves me then having to buy diesel out of pocket, yes, which is what would have happened.
Yeah.
But it was a weird situation because I looked at it and I thought, oh crap, you're going to have to buy 2 diesels out of pocket. You're going to go bankrupt. And then what's interesting is that my net worth before I bought the 6 train was higher than second place, who's James, right? And James was there, but he's operating after both of your trainless companies operate. But he also has to buy diesel out of pocket. So I'm like, if I buy the 6, James has to buy diesel out of pocket. I will be ahead in net worth. I'll be ahead in the game, right? Essentially, like, it'll put him in a worse position if I buy the last 6. But then I looked at it and you, both your companies were operating before James had to operate.
Right.
Yeah. And I was like, oh crap. So what now if you go bankrupt before he's forced to buy the diesel?
Yeah.
The game ends and he wins.
Yeah.
Instead of me.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Well, he's second, sort of, or are you saying?
No, because he wouldn't have had to buy the train yet.
Oh, okay.
You know, so my net worth temporarily is lower than his.
Right, okay.
But if he has to buy the diesel, which he will have to, assuming you survive,
yeah,
then...
So does that leave you in first?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, I think I will survive, so James will have to buy. Like, I looked at that as well. I rested his 4. His one company had only a 4 with buying that diesel, so he will have to buy a diesel out of pocket. I'm pretty sure I'll survive. I'm going to get some dividend payments in. So what's interesting about buying the force buy out of pocket, what I also learned with that quick online play of ours, is it's kind of good to operate last, because if you have to sell shares, then you've gotten the dividends in from those shares already for that one OR at least. So I tried to, when buying this diesel now, sell shares that I'd already gotten dividends in, but also to sell shares of people that are ahead of me in net worth if that share will move down the stock price. So, for example, if someone has 6 shares and I have 1 share in this company, I can sell the share and maybe it drops the price by $10, but it affects the person ahead of me in money 6 times $10 because right, they have 6 shares. So yeah, so there's quite a bit to look at when selling those shares as well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of, there continues to be these little edge case situations that kind of crop up where it could have made more sense for me potentially to like sit and juggle and then buy the diesel later. But yeah, I don't know. If assuming you were definitely going to go bankrupt,
then maybe you shouldn't have, yeah.
Yeah, if I can do something and I can see plainly that even though this is the best thing for me to do, it will result in me ending up second.
Mm.
then is it the best thing to do anymore? I guess it's not, right?
Yeah,
it's the best thing on paper, but in practice, it's not going to be, because the way it's going to play out, it becomes a losing move. So I have to take a less optimal move. It's kind of a feel bad, but it's just...
But the other thing is, with the forced train purchase, you can also manipulate that turn order as well. Like, you could sell someone shares to make them go, like, not next, for
That's
example.
True, yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot.
That's true, if you have a chance to do that. I don't think you get the chance to sell shares if you have enough cash, though, which I did.
No, you don't. You don't.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a whole other level, right, where you could potentially... That's the thing. There's always all these factors to consider. There's a lot that can catch you out.
Yeah. Yeah, but for example, so I had to sell some shares. So I could potentially be in the position where I could sell shares in my other company that has to buy a forced train and make it so that I act after someone else that might go bankrupt when they have to do a forced train. So yeah, there's some tricky things there.
Sure, that's true. I didn't consider that, but that's definitely true.
I think there's a lot of turn order manipulation that we're not doing in our group yet.
Yeah.
But I think there's still a lot more to explore and learn.
Operating order is always such a scary thing, because you make all these plans around it, and then someone messes with it and you're kind of like, what are you doing? Like, I need to go first, stop it.
Yes.
But it can be huge in terms of especially train buying and having access to trains or having access to a route or being able to put a token down somewhere first. Like, manipulating that turn order can be massive in these games.
So that game with me, Pear, and Brian, like I was telling you, I shuffled it so that I wanted my one company to have two diesels. That because of turn order, that company operated before my company that had to do the forced train buy. So I actually got that one company to run two diesels for one OR. And that payout was big, and I have six shares in that company.
Yeah.
So, and if that order was the other way around, then that company couldn't have run both those diesels in one OR.
Sure.
So yeah, there's a lot there still.
I've never gotten a really sweet diesel run in 1830.
Oh, man. That's one thing where RR18X is really nice, because you just do the auto route calculation.
Yes.
And I think my one run was like 430 with Erie in 1830 with two diesels.
Wow.
Yeah. It was massive. It was big.
Erie has only ever been pretty mediocre for me.
I might have changed my mind on Erie. Eh? Erie can run some pretty good routes.
I feel like people always aggressively cut off that route to the east that Erie has. I feel like people are always like trying to stop me from doing that. And it's like so expensive.
But they have to. I think they have to. Otherwise, Erie can run
big. Yeah, it can run pretty good stuff. Yeah. Yeah. But I suppose there's stuff I could be doing to prevent them doing that, et cetera. So, I will take responsibility. Cool, man. Should we talk about some of these messages and emails and things that we got here?
Yeah.
That right there is the mail. Now let's talk about the mail. Can we talk about the mail, please, Mac? I'm dying to talk about the mail with you all day, okay?
Perfect. So I'm trying to figure out where is the best place. So I think you know what I'm going to do. I'm going to read out the emails that were just Hauser emails, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Probably to no one who's not South African, because I said Hauser. But you guys have listened to this podcast enough, so you know what I'm talking about. So we got an email from Thomas Loy. I want to say Loy. I'm going with that. Could be Louis, but you know.
Okay.
We're going with Loy. It's a more South African flavor anyway to his name. So he just said he recently discovered us, and it was just a nice kind of appreciation email. But he said he found out about the 18XX game genre in January this year, but this year meaning 2019.
Yes.
So he said he had a first fun but brutal play of 1846, which I thought was quite interesting.
Mm.
But it made me think how first or second play of 1846 had some brutality to it.
Mm.
I think when I dumped that company on Rudy, I don't know if that was our first game or our second game of it we played.
I think if everyone's very new at 18XX, it won't be brutal.
Yes.
But if he played with some more experienced people, then they definitely can make it more brutal.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I feel like once you understand 46, it actually is easier in a way. I don't know. Maybe that makes no sense. But I think that in terms of like company dumping and things like that, I think, let me put it this way. You learn to finance your company more effectively, I think, for the most part. And so it feels like the money comes in relatively easy, even if people are buying up your shares and things like that. You can kind of make it work. It's fine.
Yeah.
So, but I think when you don't know exactly how to like sell shares you know, issue shares, so to speak, from your company and buy them back or raise your price and refinance it properly and things like that, then it can kind of feel a bit like, oh, I'm out of money and someone dumped this crap on me. And
yeah. What's the rule called in 1846 where the trains don't rust immediately, you get to run them from
phasing out.
Phased out, yes. Rudy was the one that said that's like the most newbie-friendly rule ever, which is quite true.
Yes, I think. Yeah. It definitely is. It's like you can run this one more route. You might want to withhold
if
you can't afford a train.
Hint, hint.
Yeah, exactly. So he said, with someone rusting my trains, which I scrambled to emergency finance, but then had the company taken over as I had to sell down. And that got him hooked. So you are the perfect train gamer, Thomas. If you get absolutely owned and it hooks you, you're the right person for 18xx.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad you liked your first play. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that was our first or second play of 18xx was 46. And it was the same thing where someone got their company, like I dumped it on someone and then like I rebought it once it was like in the dustbin. I sort of bought it and then rebuilt it. And then I was talking. That's where Rudy got his worst CEO.
Yes, because he was running it like not well. And you were like, no, Rudy, let me show you how to do
this. Yeah, so then I took it over and then it just became like profitable and the stock started like triple jumping. I was like, let me show you how to do this.
So, but that play of his was a year ago then, right? Thomas's play.
I guess it was. I don't know if he's gotten too much opportunity to play since then. I'm not sure. Not much. He doesn't say how much he's managed to play since then, but hopefully, hopefully a lot.
Well, if he got hooked, he probably managed to play a few more times since then. Yeah,
yeah. Let's hope so. And then we got an email from Jonathan Pickles, who is we know him from Facebook as well. He does those nice redesigns.
Right, yes, I've seen his name.
Some of those redraws, so to speak, of some games. I have a couple of your designs, Jonathan, so thanks for that. Very, very cool. So he said his email title was nothing much, but he says he's just emailing to say he's still really enjoying the podcast and there's no other way to feedback, so there you go.
Oh, that's cool, man. Yeah. No, but that's valuable feedback.
Exactly. It's like you were enjoying it and you still are. So, okay.
That's good. We're still on the right track.
Yes. Yeah. He said he hopes we don't burn out trying to make one a week. Or at least you slow down if you think you might recognize early before you come to resent it.
I'm nowhere close to resenting making the podcast.
Yeah, no, me neither. It's fine. And I think part of it is that we have a reasonably casual presentation. So it's not always, we don't always, like sometimes if I'm trying to prepare like a strategy episode, I'll try and do a lot of research and put some effort into that and things like that. But oftentimes we just have a play and we chat about it. We talk about the things we've learned. And I think you have to have a reasonably, I guess I want to say, casual presentation with a once a week kind of format.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you probably will burn out if it becomes too much like hard work.
Yeah.
So I think from the beginning is we like talking about these games. We're going to put it out there. And if people like listening to it, we'll keep publishing.
And we'll play them even if we don't have a podcast. So it's not like it's a chore to play them.
Exactly. Yeah. So you said, I listened to your pre-Christmas show. One of you said you lost at 1830. Then a little while later mentioned you bought the last four train. It's called the Poisoned Four for a reason. He said, generally do not buy the last non-permanent train unless you can benefit from immediate access to the permanent trains.
Right.
Which I think is fair.
Yes.
You want to buy like four or five.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think part of the reason that 1830 play went so badly for you and Rudy was that I managed to get all 3-5 trains, which is kind of insane. But the only way for that to happen is if someone buys.
Well, it was probably me then that bought the last
four. Buys the poison four.
So yeah. That's a good tip for something to look out for. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. They often, I've heard it referred to often as the poison four. Mm. Yeah. Because I think basically, once someone buys the four, people start floating companies in the next stock round, get a lot of finance, and you can suddenly push into diesels and stuff very quickly from there. So it's 3-5s and 2-6s.
Yeah, there's not a lot.
So it's not a lot. But also, you don't even have to get the last six to get into diesels.
Exactly.
Either,
so there's effectively 3-5s and 1-6 before diesels are available.
Yeah.
And then your four is gone,
Exactly. And I think once the permanent trains are available, people are heavily invested in trying to get their hands on them for that safety.
Yeah.
So he said, I share some of your thoughts about 46. The end game is pretty static with the routes being a pain to calculate. It's also very forgiving and money pours in. Is, however, over quickly and we can bash it out in 2.5 hours. Yeah, I think for us, we just need to be able to call that game early, I think.
Yeah.
If it gets boring or if it's pretty clear who's won, we just just call it.
Yeah.
So he says, actually, he feels like 1830 is quite a painful end game as it can be three sets of ORs when not much happens. except that one guy has to figure out how he can improve his diesel route by 10 in 3 hours time. So he said, I used to play weekly at a club where we did not have time to finish, but I got to just after the diesels came out. I became an expert at getting a nice little 5 route set up and trains bought. This makes the extra end game feel even more drawn out as mine is already completely settled.
Okay.
Which is kind of fair, especially if it's like a 5 train. If you have a 5 train, you have a permanent, you are, I feel like, very seldomly incentivized, unless you're rusting trains, to try and get that permanent into, turn it into a diesel or whatever.
Yeah.
So I did it in our game, but that's only because I rusted all your guys' trains. Yes. and really screwed you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, yeah. So I see what he's saying. Like, it's easy to have a optimal 5 route that you can't really improve on. I've also kind of felt that way before about 1830. The bank is quite big and it can take a while to run out the bank. So I see what he's saying. But maybe that comes down to calling games more. I kind of felt like maybe we were, yeah, almost playing it a little bit slowly, or maybe if you push it faster, you push the bank faster as well.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. But it seems like he's also had that experience where sometimes the end can feel a little bit slow.
Yeah. Yeah, the other thing with buying diesels, when people start buying diesels, that's like 1,100 going back into the bank for every diesel that's bought.
Yes.
So that makes the bank, you know, last longer as well. So
exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I think some of them can feel like the last set of ORs or so is a little bit long in the tooth. But in general, I don't think it's a problem.
Yeah, I think sometimes it can feel that way when you're just trying to run out the bank.
Yeah.
I think it's almost better when it ends in a bankruptcy, especially if someone buys a diesel to bankrupt or whatever.
Yes.
Because you've kind of had the whole arc of the game.
Right.
And now there's a bankruptcy and cool, tally up, we're done.
Yeah.
It's almost better in a way.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I can agree with that. So I think it's probably more fun to end in a bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So then we had a couple of emails and messages and stuff that had kind of topics or things for discussion. So we wanted to spend some time on that as sort of our main topic for the day, really. So the first one was from Lachlan. He's messaged us before. So he said he's played 3 18XX games in person and far more in RR18XX. He said, I'm wondering if your experience matches mine. Namely, for me, in-person play feels way more imprecise as I don't automatically know other players' value or available capital, and I won't always perfectly route trains. It feels like a little bit of a different game. Do you find this too?
I definitely agree with that, yeah.
Would you say, I don't know, is there like, is more precise in your mind just better?
No, I don't think it is just better. I enjoy the preciseness of playing online. I think it's a really cool way to see what's possible to do in an 18XX by seeing the exact numbers just right there in front of you. But I also do really like the like social aspect of playing an 18XX face-to-face. It's much nicer to see someone's face when you dump a company on them than to just click a button, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So, no, I do agree. I do think online is more precise, definitely. Yeah. But that doesn't make me like it more than face-to-face.
I think it was someone on our Discord, and I'm sorry because I can't remember who, that was talking about online play, and they said it feels a little... Sometimes it can they feel hard for them to feel invested in the game because it takes like 2 weeks to play or whatever. They're not like as sort of like sucked in and invested and like what's going on and tracking everything that's happening.
Mm.
And that's something that I've found with the online plays as well, where I kind of like every time I log into it, because we have like a few going at once, I log in and be like, okay, what's happening in this game?
Yeah.
Like every single time I almost have to reevaluate
the
game set and be like, okay.
Yeah.
What am I doing? Oh, yeah, this is the one where I'm just buying up this company. Okay, buy a share, move on kind of thing, you know? So you don't have that, like, it doesn't have quite the same arc for me of, like,
right, yeah,
like the drama or the story that happens in the game where, oh, this happened and then this happened and then, like, you did this strat and you did this.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe that's, like, a social aspect, I suppose, that I'm sort of highlighting.
Yeah, but it's also, like, you have to, especially if you're playing multiple games, you have to kind of reassess where you were in this particular game. When you get back to it. If you're taking a move a day in 5 different games, you have to do that for each game. So that was actually another thing that I really enjoyed about the real-time game is like I was so like aware of like exactly what my strategy was, even when we ended the real-time part of it. Like even coming into Monday when we finished the game, I still knew exactly who had what. I didn't have to like fully reevaluate every single time I took my turn, which I think you do have to do. Like, all the information is there. It's all public information.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to, unless you make notes or something, maybe that's something to try. If you come up with a strategy, make a note for yourself and say, okay, the next stock round, this is my plan. Because otherwise you have to kind of almost come up with the plan again from scratch by looking at the numbers the next time you take your turn, like 3 days from now or whatever.
Yeah, so I think what's actually maybe interesting is that because I read this email and I was like, this makes sense, but something about it isn't connecting for me in terms of my experience. And I think I kind of just figured it out in the sense that your information is more precise.
Mm.
But in a real face-to-face game, I'm very aware of what other people are doing.
Right.
Like I see everyone taking their turn.
Mm.
And I feel like that's a difference for me. Like I'll see this person's laid this track here. I'm like, ooh, wait a minute. Like, are you going for my area? Like, do I need to token this? Do I need to be aware of this?
Mm.
Or like, you know, someone shuffles a train. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. But in our online games, I haven't been doing that. I don't like go back and read the log or whatever. I'm like very focused on my own game. And I think for that reason, it feels a little bit more disconnected.
Right.
I can see what people have done, especially if like suddenly my share price is low. I'm like, oh, what? Oh, this guy sold 4 of my shares. What a dick. You know, like, it's just kind of like that. But I don't see people taking their turns.
Yes.
I think it's because I'm often taking my turn on my phone as well because I don't work at a computer.
Yeah.
So there it's hard to like read the log and stuff. It's just hard to navigate. So yeah, maybe it feels a little bit more isolated in that sense. Like I have my own plan. I'm not super aware always of what other people are doing. I'm more just check the big danger points. Like,
right.
I have how many shares in this company? What trains does this guy have? You know, like, I want to buy this train or I have these 3 trains. Where are we in the trains? There's 2 5s left. This is dangerous, whatever, whatever. So I'm aware of that kind of stuff. But yeah, maybe I feel less connected to the game.
No, I understand exactly what you mean. Like I also don't pay as close attention to what other people are doing because you don't get to see them put the piece of track down. Like you have to make an effort to go back and look, okay, what did they do on their turn exactly? And I do that sometimes. I think if I feel there's a crucial stage or something like that, or there's a route I really need to get to, then I'm paying more attention to what tiles other people are laying down and things like that. But what I found myself doing like every time now when I play online is, especially in the ORs, when it's your turn in the OR on RR18XX, it opens up on the map. And I now always go back to the finance screen. And I just remind myself, okay, I have these companies, this person has these companies, what could they potentially do? Could they shuffle something there? Am I in danger of being dumped on? You know, do I have 2 shares in any company of someone that has more than one company? I think that's a key thing to look out for. But a big thing for me is like just reminding myself which companies am I operating? Because my ORs are becoming more kind of like all my companies trying to work together in their ORs, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like I'm often trying to, sometimes trying to, one company might be set and it's got its best route and it will stay the best route for a while. Now I'm trying to use that company to build track for one of my other companies that they can make use of, things like that. So I think it's good to just remind yourself who's operating which companies and kind of keep that in mind.
You know? Yeah, because you can't argue with what Lachlan said.
No, I agree with him.
You definitely have more information. It's just my experience is that in face-to-face games, I feel more aware of everything that's going on.
Yeah, but in a different sense, like not in the exact numbers, like he says.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like even though I don't know exactly how much money Fred has, I feel more aware of Fred's money in an online in a face-to-face game than I do in an online game.
Because
otherwise, you have to sort of like manually check everything. If that makes sense, I don't know if this makes any sense. Maybe it's just the way my brain works. But in a face-to-face game, I can sit at the table and just look around, and I can just see, oh, there's a big pile of chips over there. Like, oh, Rudy's got a lot of cash. He could float next round. Then I'll peer at his chips and be like, can he float? Does he have enough? 5? He's got 600. He can definitely float. You know. But I can immediately take in like what's happening, how many shares I have. I can look down at my shares and just see a big pile and I can see which ones I have 2 of or 5 of or whatever.
Yeah.
It's almost easier to see. Whereas in R18XX, I have to go to each company and then like look down like, okay, I've got 1 of this. What is this company? And trace my eye to the left. Okay, this is New York, New Haven. Okay, you know what I mean?
Like,
even though the information is more precise, it feels more compartmentalized in a way.
But I think it's also because you have to, like, because it's taking such a long time, like it might be 2 days between your turns. Whereas when you're playing live, yes, you're aware of the tiles people are putting down, but it's also like you've got your strategy in the forefront of your mind the whole play.
Exactly.
You don't have to come up with it every time you take your turn.
So, I agree with that. So I would say yes, definitely more precise information just by virtue of the platform. But for me, I feel more plugged into a game and actually like strategically more aware of what's going on. I feel like I'll probably definitely play better face-to-face than I do online.
I like seeing the numbers and being to puzzle kind of like the optimal move out, which I think will help with face-to-face plays as well. Even though you don't have the exact numbers, you know kind of what's possible and you know that kind of thing. And that will make it easier to spot those potential situations in face-to-face games, I think.
I think it depends how you're wired as well. I think if you're more like a mathematical, analytical, numbers kind of person, like a spreadsheet or like clearly presented information might make more sense to you. Whereas I feel like I'm just more of like a visual person. Like I just want to look around the table and see whose chip stack looks the biggest, you know, kind of thing. And it's just maybe how my brain processes information a little bit differently in a way.
Yeah, no, I think everyone's different in that way for sure.
So it's kind of interesting. I think you just have to try it and see.
Mm.
But for me, there's no substitute for face-to-face. Like, I would never say that I prefer playing online, ever.
No, me neither. I much prefer face-to-face. But if I can't do that, then I'll take online.
I like our online games. It's fun for me because we get to chat with the people we're playing with. We get to engage with the people in our Discord channel and stuff, which is sweet. So I really like the online players, and I think it's fun. But, like, I get excited. Like, if I know I'm playing an 18XX on Saturday, I'm like excited for that game.
Yeah.
I'm not like excited to start another online game. I'm like, yeah, sure, we can play.
Yeah.
That's cool. You know, like, it's fun, but it's not like, yes, like, it doesn't feel like the same, like, experience. You know, like, we're going to do it.
Yeah, man.
But thanks for the question, Lachlan. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Good question.
I'd encourage everyone to try, though.
Oh, yeah.
Try a game of R18XX or whatever. See how you feel about the online thing. Yeah. A lot of people use Tabletop Simulator as well. I think that feels a little bit more real life-ish to a lot of people, especially if they like play real time with voice. And I think that has to be real time. So that's basically just a digital representation of a board game table.
Yeah.
So you chat over voice and you manipulate the pieces and that kind of jazz. So I think for some people that feels a little bit more authentic as well. And then Pear asked an interesting question. Funny enough, actually in the Dads on a Map Discord, even though Pear's in our Discord as well, but we're both in the Dads on a Map one. So he said, maybe a discussion about what to do when you cannot win an 18XX might be a good subject for a future Derailed episode. There might be Kingmaker situations. And he said he had a similar discussion about win/second place with one player who always went for the win and didn't mind bankruptcy. While Pear says he tries to avoid personal bankruptcy, which might mean he does not chance everything on a potential win. It's funny that, because I feel like in a lot of like Euro games and stuff, there's value in being second versus being fourth. I've heard people like JC and stuff say before that for them, like, it's either a win or nothing. Like, it doesn't make a difference who came second or third. And a lot of people have expressed that specifically in the context of an 18XX game. Like, with the way an 18XX kind of works, like, you can be really close to winning but go bankrupt. It's not like a linear score track.
Right.
There's a lot of moving parts or whatever. So, yeah, oftentimes you can do something that if you had an extra dollar, it would mean like you win, but because you don't, you go bankrupt, right? Or something like that. There's a whole thing where, yeah, something just doesn't quite work out, or you needed this thing to go this way and it didn't, or someone bought this train faster than you expected and it crashed and burned your whole strategy. Yeah, there's been a lot of talk around risking more for a potential win that you can play right on the edge between winning and bankruptcy.
Right, yeah.
I don't know. How do you feel about second place? Do you like getting second in 18XX? Do you care?
I think 18XX is... I kind of do agree with it's win or nothing, but I do feel better if I'm second than if I'm last.
Right.
So, and for me, last is the same as going bankrupt. So if I'm last, I'm going to try stuff. I think if you're lost, you can just try anything possible to not be lost. Like, that's kind of the way I play. Like, I wouldn't try and bankrupt myself if I'm lost, but I would try and like upset the game, if that's the right word.
You knew you were second, would you try and keep second?
No, if there was something I could do to win, if I could, then I would do that.
But if that attempt to win would come at the extreme risk of bankruptcy. So you can't ever percentage the stuff, but let's imagine that you're coming second, you're definitely going to come second. There's something that you can do that gives you a 2% chance to win, but a 98% chance to go bankrupt. Would you do it?
Yo, that's an interesting question. I think I probably would, yeah.
I think the correct, I'm making serious air quotes here, argument would be to do it, because second is second. It's the same as fourth. Yeah. It only matters if you win, right? So it depends how much personal value you place on being second.
Yeah.
In theory, anything that gives you a chance to win is worth it, even if it risks coming last, because it doesn't matter if you weren't going to win anyway.
Yeah. And that's interesting because, like in the real world, real investors don't mind being the second richest person in the world.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I think because 18xx has a hard stop at some point, it's like it's running a race. It's the winner is the only one that matters.
It totally depends how you quantify it. And I think it's also going to be a metagame thing depending on you and your group.
Yeah.
Like if you're part of a gaming group and they talk about who came second in the last game, you're suddenly going to have more value in being second.
I think our group should start doing that because you're winning way too much.
No, but you know what I mean? Like if let's say they were like, oh man, I came second twice in the last two games. Like I've been doing really well. They're like, yeah, man, you've been like crushing it, dog. Yeah, you came second, you know? If your group had conversations like that, your group is now placing value on placement rather than just first or nothing.
But I think that's almost like placing value on playing 18xx as a solitaire game, just to see how well you can do.
Yeah.
Whereas I think 18xx should be much more interactive. Like you want to win by crushing the other people.
Yeah.
Like I think playing for second isn't...
I agree with you, but I guess what I'm saying is that it's such a subjective thing in a way. It's hard to put an objective spin on it because value is value to each person differently. Mm. And that's what I'm saying. If in your group there was some sort of like cachet to being second, then people would play for second. If no one remembered who came second last week, if all we remembered was who came first, then people would take that 2% chance.
Yeah, but I also think like, maybe if you finish second lot, people don't see you as a threat. Like they're not doing that much to kind of keep you down in the score, you know, if you know what I mean. Like I can see someone playing for the first time against super experienced players finishing second easily.
Right.
Because the other people are going to attack the better players.
Yeah.
And someone's going to come out on top, but it won't be the time for your person who plays first time, not... out of 100 times, it won't be 90 times.
It's so weird, eh? Mm. Because Pear is basically saying that, like, I value second place. I mean, I could be misrepresenting.
No, I think he's saying he would improve his standing if he can, like, which I would also do.
But he says he works hard to avoid personal bankruptcy, that he wouldn't necessarily go for a win. I had a similar discussion. I'm going to read his quote. Yeah. I had a similar discussion about win second place with one player who always went for the win and didn't mind bankruptcy, while I try to avoid personal bankruptcy, which might mean I do not chance everything on a potential win.
Okay.
So he's essentially saying he wouldn't take that 2% chance.
Right. He does value his rank in the finishing. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's a really experienced player. So it's a weird thing. It's just like, and I know someone like JC Lawrence, who we've mentioned a lot on the podcast because he often writes in and stuff, would say like anything other than first is meaningless.
Yeah. Well, so in one of our Discord chats the other day, I actually said the only places that matter are first and last, which I think is true as well. Like, I think it is kind of like fun to be the person that goes bankrupt.
Yes.
And it's also fun to be the person that wins.
Yeah.
So I do think both of those places matter.
It is kind of funny. Like, I must say, I mind being last in 18xx way less than in any other game.
Okay.
Like, I've been last in a couple of our games, actually. And it's usually because I tried something. I was like, let me try something different. Or, like, I want to fiddle with this and see if this works. I want to try this. Like, in 49, I was like, I want to try float this and close it and see if that works out or whatever.
Mm.
And I was last. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. I think it's because I didn't feel like I'm last because I played incredibly poorly. I think it's because, like, I feel like, well, I'm lost. I tried something. It didn't work out.
Yeah, and you learned something
from it. Yeah, and I learned something from it. That's fine, you know?
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, it's interesting because I guess the question is 18xx fundamentally different from Great Western Trail from Agricola, from some random Euro, right?
I think it's definitely different to something like a Caverna. I think in a Caverna, second is valuable.
Yeah.
Because it is more of a solitaire game. And I don't think 18XX should be a solitaire game. So I do think, like, yeah, I think it's for me, I think it's almost win or nothing.
I'd agree with you because those games where you get cumulative points over the course of the game, whoever has most at the end, whoever came second actually did play second best.
Yes.
They played second best in terms of their optimization puzzle, in terms of getting points, amassing points. There's no moment in Caverna where, I hope people know this game that we're using as an example, but any random Euro with a score tracker on the border, you know the type, right? There's no moment where you can like risk everything and just lose it all on like a potential risky move or something like that. It just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Because it's not the same thing. And I think that's the point that people make about 18XX a lot, is that that's how it works.
Yeah.
You can lose everything.
Mm.
So there's no like, if you came second, you didn't play like second as well.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's a good point. Yeah. Becoming second in 18XX doesn't mean you played second best out of the group. I think that's a good point. Yeah.
So to answer Per's actual question that he actually asked, was he was basically saying, in a game, if you can't do anything, is it okay just to declare bankruptcy? Should you be expected to prolong the game in some way?
That's interesting.
So this exact situation happened in one of my online games with the patrons. Patrons. Happened and won a game with them where I didn't have enough money to buy a diesel or whatever after my stuff got rusted. And I don't think I had enough money to sell all the shares either. But I could have bought my train from another company. I only had one company. I could have like juggled it between the two and somehow tried to like come back in some way, or just had my shares slowly depreciate and get no income. And you know, I could have like sold down those companies and then like tried to invest in other people's companies. I wouldn't have been out of the game.
But would you have been lost?
Probably, yeah.
Then I think lost and bankrupt is the same.
So that's the thing. Am I obligated to keep the game going for the sake of it? Yeah, I felt like no, that's why I just...
In my opinion, you're not. I mean, I can see an argument being made for first and second are very close and the next set of ORs can change it. So yeah. I can see some people saying there could be a bit of king making if you go bankrupt instead of shuffling your train back and forth between your two companies. But I do think 18XX is a cutthroat world. If you can't win, then like, I mean, you're playing to try and win yourself. And if you're going to finish fourth, doesn't matter who's first and second, like you might as well be bankrupt.
Yeah, for me, the king making would come in as if I did something against the norm to help someone else.
Mm.
So for me, king making would be if I juggled my trains to give you time to do this move you wanted to do. And then after that, I stopped juggling them. I was like, oh, I'm bankrupt.
Right. But I mean, that all I might need to come first is the next set of ORs.
Yeah.
So by you juggling trains once, you give me that set of ORs.
Yeah.
And like we kind of both agree, like 18XX is kind of win or nothing. So if I come second, that's nothing. If you juggle your train once and you're helping me come first. And like, maybe the fairest way to do it is if you're in that position, don't even do the calculation. Like, don't even look at who's going to win. Like, just look at, do you have a shot at third or not?
Oh, no.
Third versus fourth.
That's exactly what I'm saying, though. You see, in my mind, if you are screwed and you can go bankrupt, I think you should.
Mm.
That's how I honestly think. I think I don't think you're obligated to keep the game going for other people.
No. If you had a chance at third, would you keep playing?
No, because third is nothing.
No.
It's the same argument, I guess, right? But third is irrelevant. Like, what is the point of me sitting there juggling my trains around, selling down all my shares, literally just to stay alive?
Yeah, you see, there I'm kind of like torn because I agree that it's win or nothing, but I also do feel like maybe I put more value on fourth on last than I think. So if I'm last and I can go bankrupt, but I can also be third in a four player game, for example, I think I would try to be third.
I would try to, but I guess. I mean, you're always trying to do the best that you can. But if I'm in a situation where the only way I can survive is by doing something that makes no sense, that has no clear route to
anything. Because it's not in the rules, right? The rules don't say, if you can buy a train from another company, you're obligated to.
Mm.
The rules are, you don't have a train, you can force buy. If you can't afford to force buy after selling all your, using all your cash and selling all your shares, you're bankrupt, end of game.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here. I didn't have enough money after selling shares and cash.
No, but that's fine, because in your situation, you would be bankrupt or lost.
Yeah.
But so I'm asking, if you could be bankrupt or second lost, would you keep playing?
No.
Yeah, you see, I think I would.
Really?
Because I think for me, like, I think I, for me, it's still valuable experience to see how I can ladder up. Because one day that last versus third might be second versus first
situation. I think my distinction is basically, is there a way I can still be in this game?
Mm.
Like, still in the game. Like, can I need to have a plan. Like, cool, I'll juggle this train for two ORs, and then for some reason I'll have enough money to buy a train. Let's say that's the situation. Mm. I might do that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because then it's like a clear path. Like, yeah. But I could also see, I could juggle this train for 2 hours and have enough money to buy a train, but I'll have 6 shares to my name and 0 cash. There's no ways I'm ever coming back from that. I'm just going to declare bankruptcy now.
Yeah, but isn't that the same as being bankrupt or lost?
I guess so.
But yeah, so I think it's more tricky when it's either bankrupt or second lost. Like,
I don't know. If you can see that, like, so let's say, let's make a hypothetical example here. I'm going to end up on 6 shares and 0 cash.
Mm.
A terrible situation. An unwinnable position. Let me put it that way. But for some reason, some poor bastard went before me and he also went almost bankrupt and he's got 3 shares and 0 cash.
Mm.
Should I now not accept my position of 6 shares and 0 cash because I'm third?
So what are you saying? You'd go bankrupt?
Yeah, because I'm out of the game. Like, it's over. Like,
no, but if you just take your turn and let the other person go bankrupt, isn't that better?
No, no, I'm saying, so this is a hypothetical, total hypothetical. Someone else, let's say someone has one company, they train rust, right? They have to buy a train. They opt for force buy, they use all their cash to sell all their shares down to 3 shares and they buy a diesel, right? They're on 3 shares and 0 cash.
Mm.
Now it's my turn. I have 2 companies with 1 permanent. I have to buy a diesel. My options are either try to buy the diesel, but I'm unable to. I'll go bankrupt if I try to buy it.
Mm.
Or I can juggle this train back and forth.
Mm.
Right?
But I'm saying for me, it's different whether juggling that train back and forth will keep me in last place or will keep me in second last place.
It'll keep me in second last place. In my hypothetical, this will keep me in second last place. I'll juggle it back and forth. I'll never be able to do anything other than juggle it back and forth, sell down all my shares in the next stock round and try and buy better ones and keep juggling that piece of crap back and forth. So I'll keep the game going, but my position from that point is totally unwinnable.
Mm.
But
you're also not lost.
But I'm slightly less screwed than the other guy.
Yeah, I don't know. That's tricky. That's very tricky.
Would you really keep playing there? I don't feel like I'm obligated to keep playing at all.
I don't think you're obligated. Over. Yeah. No, I don't think you're obligated, but I think you're allowed to.
I think you're allowed to too, but you'll just be miserable in my opinion. Like,
yes.
I feel like it's horrible when someone goes almost bankrupt. That's actually my worst moment in 18XX.
Mm.
When they almost go bankrupt, they're totally out of the game, but they have to keep playing.
Yeah.
I feel like oftentimes in those situations, I actually want to say, like, just call it.
Yeah, just call it. That's fine.
But the problem with that is that if I'm the one saying that and I have the most money right now, I'm just saying, oh, yeah, just call it. I'll be the winner. So I can't really do it. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like you're interfering with the game state somehow.
Yeah.
But there should almost be like, I guess you could house rule almost like a threshold of like how screwed someone is after force buying, that like you just declare that close enough to bankruptcy that it's a bankruptcy.
Yeah, but also I think we should get over not suggesting calling a game when you're winning it. Like, you can, I think it's fair enough to ask people, look, I'm ahead. Is there anything any of you guys think you can do or you want to try?
Oh, no, I'm not talking about that situation. I'm saying, what if like me, you and Rudy are playing? Me and Rudy are like really close together. But technically right now, I'm ahead.
Okay.
But not much. We don't know who's going to win from this point. You almost go bankrupt. You end up with 1 presidency and 0 cash.
Mm.
Do we call it? You have to sit there and play doing really nothing at all, right? Mm.
You have to sit there and watch us play. But I can't say, is it fair for me to say, let's just call it? Because right now I'm ahead, but Rudy could take me over. The if game's
you,
not
if
decided.
You are too close, then I don't think.
But that's what I'm saying.
But Rudy right? won't agree to calling it. I think everyone has to agree to calling it.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. So that's why I'm saying, is there value in making some kind of like a house rule that takes away the like idea of calling it, where you're kind of like, if some poor sucker is left with less than $300 in net worth, can we just put him out of his misery and declare it close enough to bankruptcy that it is a bankruptcy?
No, I think if there's still a game for first, I think.
But that's what I'm saying. That's what I hate. I hate games that that happens because I feel so sorry for that person because their life just sucks. They just have to sit there.
I've been that person. This scenario wasn't that hypothetical.
Yeah, exactly. Rudy's been that person as well. And it's miserable. I'm sure I've been that person somewhere. It sucks. Like you just sit there and you're like, okay.
I think that does suck for the person that's lost, but I think in order to call a game, everyone must agree that it's
so. Pear's question was, are you obligated to keep the game running? If you can, according to the rules, declare bankruptcy, are you obligated to keep the game running? If within the rules you can keep the game running,
I don't think there's an obligation. No,
I would say no as well. I don't feel like you're obligated to play a miserable game just to keep everyone else's game.
I think you're allowed to if you want to keep playing.
Yeah.
You're allowed to, but I think you're also allowed to just declare bankruptcy within the rules. I think that either is fine.
So I played a game of 89 once, five-player game, and one of the guys, it was their first game, and I dumped a company on him, and he came really close to bankrupt. He had like two president's shares and like nothing else going on. Right? And he was miserable, like totally miserable. And the next hour, he said to me, can I just sell this train to this company and then just go bankrupt? Because he had two trains, one in each company. So he didn't, but he basically sent the one train to the other company.
And then had to force buy and declared bankruptcy.
And I was like, of course you can.
Yeah. And he did it.
And I had no problem with it.
And he's keen to play again.
Yeah.
I think that's
exactly. That's key, yeah. But I had no problem with that at all. And not because I won. Not because I was just like, why should you keep playing if you're miserable? Like,
no,
you don't have to keep the game going for us.
Yeah.
So that's an even more extreme example than the one Pear was talking about where someone could juggle trains back and forth.
Yeah.
This guy literally engineered his own bankruptcy. And I guess that's a different question. Is that okay?
I think that's fine as well.
I think it's fine as long as your motivations are pure.
No, I think if you're just going to have a miserable game and you can end it, end it. Like, he wasn't sitting there calculating, okay, if I do this now, Chris wins, or if I do this now, Rudy wins.
That's exactly what I'm saying, though, yeah. Like, that's why I say if your motivations are pure, right?
He was playing in his own interest, that's all. His own interest was to end the game, but that's it, yeah.
That's why I said, like, if your intentions are pure, right? Like, if it's a king, that could be like a blatant king-making thing. Obviously, that's not in the spirit. If you're like, not even close to being in trouble and you just like engineer your own bankruptcy because your friend is in the lead or whatever, you know? Yeah. But if you went almost bankrupt and you're totally miserable, I say go for it, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't think there's an obligation. And I also don't think it's bad to go bankrupt if you can.
Yeah.
If you want to. Yeah.
Because in his position, it was totally unwinnable. He was out of the game. It was bad, you know?
Yeah.
So I think for me, in those situations where someone didn't quite go bankrupt but almost goes bankrupt, if they can find a way to take themselves out of the game, I have no problem with that.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for the question, Pear. That was a cool topic.
Yeah, that is quite a discussion, actually. It's a cool one.
Yeah. So we also got an email from Johnny from Train Shuffling. So he listened to 1862 episode and he just said he has a few comments. Yeah, so I thought this was cool. They've played the game a few times. They've also, the guy they've been playing with, I think his name's Randy, he has something like 95 plays, something like that, of 1862. Wow. So it's kind of cool. So I think he's been sharing a lot of wisdom and stuff like that. So it's cool to get an experienced perspective. Yeah, so some comments he had from our play. I just want to read them. A lot of it is like kind of strategy stuff, but I thought it'd be useful or interesting to go over. So thanks for the email, Johnny. Appreciate it. So he said, we mentioned the non-chartered companies and their pros and cons. He said, but we missed an important one, which is that the non-chartered ones can be piled all the way up to 200. So he says, this means you can start one late in the game, potentially floated with the same amount of starting capital as the highest par value chartered company with twice the potential plus shares paying in. This can be huge in funding late game trains and manipulating operating order.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think we kind of forgot about how high you can actually par those those non-chartered companies. Like, parring for 200 is hectic. If you have a bunch of cash, and by the end, some of us did have a pretty big pile of cash, and you're never short of companies to float in this game either.
Yeah.
So you could definitely float a non-chartered company for a huge amount.
Yeah.
And that would let you, you know, buy some pretty sweet
trains.
That's
a very interesting point. How big is the bank again? It's big, huh?
It's big, yeah. 15,000.
It would be interesting if you float a company and the bank breaks.
Yeah.
No, that's a good point. Yeah. Interesting.
Very good point, yeah. So he said he has 2 points regarding mergers. You mentioned that early on when you merged, your share value went up, so it felt better than later mergers. But he says, even though the resultant share value may be higher than either individual company's share value, your total share value or net worth always drops when merging due to the fact that you halve your number of shares, and those shares will always have a value that is less than the combined value of the merging companies. So it never truly goes up, even if the resultant share value is higher than each individual company. Yeah, obviously that is definitely true. I'll trust your maths on that.
Yeah, but there are times when the loss you, or the hit you take is less, I think.
Yeah, very little. There were a lot of times early on where the mergers felt, I felt pretty okay with it. I was like, oh yeah, that's not bad. Like, or it felt almost like equal value, just slightly less. And then some of the later ones felt, yeah, but I think they were just a bad time to merge because they just, yeah, didn't go well. A lot of things for me in that game did not go well. So he mentioned something else, and this is, I think, a rule that I think on one or two occasions we messed up. I think maybe only on one occasion, but it was me that did it, and it didn't matter because I came stone last regardless, because it was a rule in my favor.
Okay.
So he said, you gave the advice that when you have a company that needs to buy a train, you can merge at the top of their turn to avoid the train obligation. While true, that's really a last resort, because when you do that, the trainless company's value is cut in half for calculating the merged company's share value. So you really, really want to avoid merging a trainless company.
Oh, okay. So when... Yes, that's right. That's
we
right.
We knew that. We just... definitely forgot about it when I did it, yeah.
For sure.
So when I did it, I definitely didn't halve my value, but I was so in the toilet by then, it didn't matter. Okay. So basically, I lost even harder than...
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
The distant last place I came in. Yeah. This was not a game where I came last. This last place felt bad because I didn't try anything cool. I just played really poorly.
Had games like that as well.
So you said, a company can't go bankrupt because of refinancing, and you should be aware that if after refinancing the company can't afford a train, it does go bankrupt.
Oh yeah, of course. Well, I just don't think we thought that would be feasible because you get so much money, but I guess the trains can be expensive.
So you said, I've seen it happen once and it's not pretty.
Oh man.
And it was only short by about £10 on a £600 train.
Oh, wow.
Shame.
That's amazing.
He said, on the flip side, a well-planned refinancing can help push trains faster than your opponents may have expected and can be a good weapon when used correctly.
Cool.
Though difficulty to wield competently, in his opinion.
Okay.
Yeah. We said one thing you didn't talk about is withholding, and that's another really powerful way to get capital at a very low cost. Due to the double, triple, quad jumps, it often equals out to either the same or better final share value to withhold when you know you'll be losing trains, because you'll earn that back with the better trains you'll run by jumping further or faster.
That's a very good point. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, if you withhold, you move back one space, and then if the next OR you can do a double jump where you would have just done two single jumps, then yeah, there's no downside to withholding.
And I remember saying when I was teaching the rules, I was like, they mentioned that withholding is okay in this game.
Yes.
Like, it's okay to withhold. And then I totally forgot about that and we didn't really use it that much. But that makes total logical sense. Yeah. Yeah. In a game like 1830, withholding is disastrous in a sense because you lose so much share value.
Mm.
But because you can make it back with these double jumps, also because withholding, your share value goes down, which makes it more likely to double or triple
exactly.
jump as well.
Yeah, you might be able to withhold and with a new train do a triple jump where you would have been able to do two single jumps in the set of ORs or something.
Exactly.
So yeah, no, it can be a good move. Yeah.
So I think good advice in that sense, definitely. Yeah. It says the worst thing you can do is not withhold right before all your trains rust and then have no way to inject capital because you no longer have a run at all. As in any game, you just have to time them right and, if possible, not withhold going into a stock.
Right, okay, yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So he said, another really, really good way to keep your treasury stocked is making sure you can get a local in your portfolio of companies. It's situated, if situated near another player's local, you can work together to make some very profitable runs. It feels great to restock the treasury while paying out.
Mm.
Yeah, so locals, for anyone who may have forgotten, there were a lot of rules, but locals pay £10 per place you visit.
Right.
Into the treasury.
Of the company. So you calculate, on top of their normal dividends.
Yeah. Right. So you calculate routes very normally with a local. It's just like other trains, except you can't run off boards, but it also pays into the treasury a £10 bonus for every thing you visit into the treasury.
Wasn't there a way for it to pay 20?
No, I think you're thinking of a freight train that goes from 20 to 30.
Right, okay.
If it hits a port.
Yeah. So that's actually something that I did in my game. Maybe we didn't mention it, but I early on had one company with a local train and another company with express, with an express train. When I merged the two, the first train I bought was another local. And explicitly because it was a way for me to get more money into the company. Yeah. No, that's a very good tip. It is actually something I spotted and made use of, and it worked well.
Yeah, really well. So yeah, the map is so interesting because it's so small, but it's so dense.
Mm.
So there's a lot going on.
Yeah.
He says it's also important to remember you can buy any train type with any company, so you could use that local money to buy freight and then merge with that freight.
Oh, so the permit doesn't mean you can't buy it; it just means you can't run it.
Oh,
that's interesting.
Yes,
that's I don't think we knew that.
I don't think we did either. No, yeah. I don't think that ever we ever. No one ever did that. I think we just assumed you couldn't buy it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That's cool.
That makes sense, though, right? Because a company can buy whatever it wants, but it needs a permit in order to use that train.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're about to merge and get a permit. Yeah, interesting.
Mm. Very cool. Yeah, so you said, you mentioned our playthrough on YouTube, and I just wanted to point out we played with Randy Brown, who's played over 95 games of 1862.
Hmm.
So we had some guidance, and the game is a good example of decent, not expert play due to that guidance, not the beginner floundering around you might expect. Our first play took 4 hours and 11 minutes with 5 players. Hopefully you have a chance to check it out and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. No, I definitely always recommend these guys' videos. They make some really great stuff on YouTube, which is very cool because there's not a lot of 18XX YouTube stuff or 18XX anything for that matter. So he said, I've since played 3 more times and his longest game was 5 hours with 6 people.
Okay.
And that was quite slow with 2 brand new players. Oh, that's brave. New players for 1862. And I've played a 3-player game in less than 3 hours. These were all with the long game, which I thought was interesting. So we were talking about the short, medium, long games that you get in the box. It just changes the number of trains. But because trains are literally a game time in the sense that when the last stack of trains is bought, it triggers an endgame condition. That does significantly impact the thing. So yeah, that's very cool because I thought that this could be a short game. I knew that we push the trains pretty slowly and we were also taking our time with the game. So I thought that you could potentially, but this surprised me that this was even with the long game.
Yeah.
And he said Randy doesn't recommend playing normal or short, which is kind of interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So he said trains can push very fast in this game. B trains can last a while, which I think we notice as well, and are usually the best non-permanent investment. Everything else non-permanent kind of sucks and will rust quickly.
Okay.
If you buy one of the last A or D trains, it can be worthwhile to fully warranty them. He says, I'm by no means an expert, but these are the things I've picked up in my handful of plays so far, and hopefully it helps. Yeah, thanks, Johnny. We really appreciate such an in-depth email, and it's really, really cool.
Yeah, that's quite useful, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good tips and info, and thanks for pointing out the stuff that we missed as well.
Yeah, maybe we should try the long game next time, now that we have a better handle on the rules.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just to push the trains faster as well.
Yeah.
Probably play a little bit faster too.
Yeah.
We were having a lot of banter. Okay. He said, PS, you guys should come to TotalCon in Massachusetts next month and play train games with us.
Oh, man.
If you do, I know you won't, lol. I'll host a game at my place prize too so we can do a stream. That'd be a blast.
Oh, that sounds awesome. I'd love to do that.
I wish, man. Yeah. When will they invent teleportation? It's the problem with being at the butthole of the world. Way down, yeah.
Well, teleportation is a deep philosophical discussion we can have.
Oh, yes, yeah. I think we've discussed that a bit before.
We have, yeah, the whole continuity problem.
Yes, what's that called? The ship of Theseus or whatever, as well. Like, yes. If you replace every part of a ship, is it still the same ship?
Yeah.
Kind of the same
if
question.
If you haven't watched the movie Prestige, go watch the movie Prestige.
Yeah, true. That actually
that movie nails that problem.
Yes, absolutely. No spoilers. That's a great movie. It's actually my favorite movie. When people ask me my favorite movie, as I say, The Prestige.
Yeah, I think it's up there in my one of my favorites as well, for sure. Yeah. Loved it. The last time someone asked me, I did say Prestige.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Chris Nolan, man. I'll watch anything he does.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to squeeze in a quick South African thing because I think this has been a long one.
Yeah.
We somehow managed to talk a lot. But yeah, thanks everyone for the emails, topics, suggestions, all that jazz. We appreciate the content this week.
It's, yeah, definitely.
It saved me having to come up with the topic, so that's great. Yeah. So South African stuff. Actually had an interesting experience this weekend. So I went to Kruger National Park, which is our biggest game reserve. Quite a famous one.
Mm.
Hilary Duff is there right now.
Oh, okay. Me.
Yeah.
Did she have the fortune of meeting you?
No, she didn't. Yeah, apparently she didn't go to the campsite coffee shop. Yeah. I think she's staying in like a private lodge with her own personal of game shows and stuff. Yeah.
You know, there's a runway and everything in Kruger.
Yeah, exactly. So
she probably flew in.
Yeah. So yeah. I don't think she's cruising around in like a hatchback like me, like peering out the windows. I think she's got the deluxe experience.
Yeah.
But anyway, so while we were up there, we were staying in a little town called Hoedspruit. But Hoedspruit has something pretty unique in the sense it has Jessica the Hippo. Do you know about Jessica the Hippo?
No.
So hippos are the most dangerous animal in Africa. Mm. They kill more people than anything else. Even
besides man.
Yeah. And mosquitoes.
Human.
Yeah.
Human, I mean. Yeah. And mosquitoes. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So they, if we're talking big animals, they kill way more people than crocodiles, lions, anything like that in Africa. They are very aggressive, very territorial, even though they're vegetarians.
Mm.
They've got these giant, like, fangs. I don't know what else you'd call them. These huge teeth, and they're monsters. They're like 4 tons. So, yeah, they're scary. But Jessica the Hippo is the only tame, and I use tame in inverted commas, hippo. So what happened with this was there were these people that live in Hoedspruit, and this hippo, there was a flood and it washed up on their front step with an umbilical cord still attached to it.
Oh, wow.
Literally just born, right? And the mom, I think, was presumed died, washed away in the floods. So this hippo was rescued by them, nursed back to health by them, essentially. And it started to just, like, it decided to stay with them, essentially. Mm. Totally of its own free will. So it's totally free. There's no captivity involved. So every day it goes out and chills with the hippo bros, the wild hippos that live nearby.
Okay.
Goes and grazes there, hangs out with the hippos. But every night it would come back to their house and, like, it's destroyed multiple couches and beds because it tries to climb with them, and it sleeps outside their house. They put a blanket on it, and it drinks rooibos tea and chills, right?
Sure.
So it's this weird situation where this hippo just decided to befriend people.
Mm.
So now they've started offering this, like, hippo experience kind of thing where you can feed this hippo.
Mm.
This was the most terrifying thing I've ever done. And I think probably the most stupid, because as much as they say it's tame, I don't believe it.
Mm.
Like, there's all these animals that have been, like, tame, right? Like people with pet lions. There was another guy who had a pet hippo. It was very friendly until one day it dragged him to his own dam and killed him.
Wow.
That happened in South Africa as well. So I feel like these people are a bit, like, risky with this thing. But anyway, we went on this hippo experience. So you have to feed it these, like, potato slices, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, so it knows what time to come. There's two times when you can see her. And she obviously just knows to rock up at this, like, dock at that time. So it puts its whole head on the dock and just opens this huge mouth. And this woman's like, okay, so just lay the slice in between these two giant fangs.
Ooh.
There's no teeth there, but you have to literally put your hand in its mouth and, like, lay this potato slice gently, like, on its bottom jaw. And it just goes, clomp, clomp, clomp. Thank you. Give me another one.
Wow.
Oh, my word, dude. It was so terrifying. It's this, like, 3-ton monster.
Mm.
And then we feed it rooibos from, like, a bottle with this big, like, teat attached to it, like a giant baby's bottle. It drinks rooibos tea. So we feed it this rooibos, and then you can kiss it. So you can, it, like, slurps this rooibos, and then you can kiss it on the nose. It's like a whole system. You have to stroke its nose and then feed it the potato and then give it this bottle or whatever. It's a whole thing.
Mm.
But then the woman was like, only the girls can kiss Jessica. She no longer likes men kissing her. And I was like, how did you find this out?
Yeah.
Which corpse is buried in the backyard, cut in half by a hippo that didn't want to be kissed? You know what I mean? I'm like, how do you know this? What happened, guys?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I fed this thing tea with a bottle. And I was terrified. Yeah, because when you do the bottle feed, it, like, puts both its legs on this raft. It goes, like, vroom, and puts its whole upper half on this like a floating raft, basically. And the whole thing goes whoom, and like water rushes across the whole thing. Everyone's like, yeah. So this is the only place in the world where you can interact at all with a hippo.
With the hippo, wow.
Because they're not tame. There's no tame ones. There's no like, they used to let people swim with her, apparently, I heard.
Mm.
They don't let them do that anymore. But I think you'd be a madman to swim with a hippo.
Yeah.
They're scary. They're super scary. Yeah, so I survived it. It was pretty cool.
That's good. You've got all your fingers and hands.
I survived it. I've got the photographic evidence to prove it.
Wow.
But yo, I was like scared. And this woman had all these instructions. She's like, don't talk while you're feeding her. She doesn't like that.
Yeah.
And then it was so funny. I was a bit nervous with my first potato slice because you feed her like three, right?
Mm.
And my first one, I like didn't put it all the way in her mouth. And she was kind of like trying to get it in or whatever. And she's like, put it all the way in. And I was like, sorry. And then I was like, I spoke while talking. I spoke like while feeding her. She doesn't like it when I talk. She's going to eat me.
Yeah, I'm a little bit torn on stuff like that. Because, like, obviously, it's an amazing once-in-a-lifetime experience. But I think you're risking people thinking that hippos are friendlier than they are in general.
Yeah, definitely. So they do make a point of saying that, like, because they show you this DVD documentary thing at the beginning. And they say, like, she's the only tame hippo, like, blah, blah, blah. They're very dangerous, et cetera, et cetera.
But it's not just the hippo. I mean, we have lion parks where kids stroke lion cubs and things.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same thing. Like, I think it's it can cause a bit of a general blasé-ness kind of thing to animals that can be really, really dangerous.
Yeah, so lion cubs seem to be okay, but once they're adult, they're unpredictable. So they won't let you interact with an adult, although some people obviously do. But there was that guy recently who was killed by lions.
Mm.
He had like a bunch of pet lions or whatever. He had like a lion park and he would feed them and stroke them or whatever.
Mm.
And they got pissed off with him and they killed him in front of a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Because he went into the cage or whatever and like to do whatever. And they just decided today is the day we're going to eat your ass. Like,
yeah.
It's crazy.
I guess they can have bad moods.
Yeah. Cheetahs are safe. I believe there's no recorded cheetah attack from a tame cheetah. They're the most safe of all.
Oh, really?
Adult ones, yeah. Leopards are totally untamable. You can't do anything with a leopard. As soon as it turns like juvenile or adult, it just starts attacking people straight up. So like, it ranks like this because these are the main cats we have in South Africa, is leopards, cheetahs, and lions, right? So leopards, totally no-go. Lions, you can tame them, but they're a little bit unpredictable. Like one day they might kind of turn on you. And cheetahs, 100% safe.
Hmm.
So I've stroked an adult cheetah before, and like I've been to a thing where you can go inside with an adult cheetah and you can stroke it and take photos and play with it. And it's really like a big friendly cat.
Yeah, interesting. Well,
yeah, but you do kind of, it made me think like how much we trust. When I was standing on that rickety raft with some person who was just like, she wasn't like a trained person, you know what I mean? She was just like some like helper on their farm, right? Like telling us what to do, feeding this thing tea out of like a 2-liter Coke bottle with the label ripped off. Like I was questioning some of my decisions that led me to this point because I'm like, it's never attacked anyone before, but who wants to be the first?
Yeah,
who wants to be the guy who makes the news? Like, Jessica the hippo is now kind of a dick. Like, don't do this anymore. Because someone has to be the first.
Yeah.
I don't think it's super safe. It's such a, like, a crazy experience because you'll never get to do it anywhere else. And it's kind of, it was one of those things where it was over in like 10 minutes. And then afterwards, you're like, holy crap. Like that was actually kind of insane, you know?
Yeah.
So it was cool. I'm glad I did it because I survived. But
yeah,
I wouldn't like let my kids do it.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know what I mean? Like I feel nervous.
Yeah.
So it was pretty interesting. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing experience, I'm sure. But yeah.
Yeah. But weird, man. Stroking a hippo on the nose and then its huge mouth opens. Potato, please. You have to put your whole hand in there, man. Oh. My friend kissed it. She was brave. My wife wasn't brave enough to kiss it. She just like, okay, I'll give it the potato slice, but that's what I'm drawing.
Yeah. But does it even like notice the potato slice though? Because it could eat a whole watermelon in one go.
Like, it does, yeah. So it goes like chews it almost. Yeah. Like, wow. And it just opens its mouth like, potato please. And then you put it in and it closes it and swallows and opens up again. Like, potato please. It knows the drill. It knows how to get its free food. Like,
yeah. Wow. Cool.
Yeah. So I think now they've like monetized this thing essentially. I think just to pay for this thing's food because it eats so much. It
must eat a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's cheap. It's like $100 to go and do this whole thing, which is very little. That's like $7.
Yeah.
basically, something like that.
Yeah. To go and feed the hippo and whatever. So
Yeah, it's not a lot. It's a once in a lifetime thing for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Cool, man.
Yeah. So that's my near death experience. Thanks for listening. And yeah, thanks very much, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Yeah, I think this one ran a little bit long, but hopefully you enjoyed our mix of topics.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Yeah, we'll catch you next week.
Yes.
Cool.
Cheers. Cheers.
Bye.
If you would like to get in touch with us, we are at derailed18xx on Instagram and Twitter. You can email us, derailed18xx@gmail.com, and we're on Patreon at patreon.com/derailed18xx. Thanks for listening.